Andrei, let's start with this new administration of Putin. Last time we talked, you were foreseeing what would happen to this administration, and you were right in your predictions. And right now, there is a new article in the New York Times. It says Putin's new war weapon, an economist managing the military. When it comes to these type of articles, what are they afraid of, in your opinion?
Well, if we assume the fact that there are still some people who with IQ higher than room temperature in New York Times, but of course it's outlet. I don't remember outlet for who. It's either DNC or CIA. So, you know, Washington Post. So they are all fronts, you know, for some organizations. So somebody fed them information that Belousov is bad. It's bad. He's bad for NATO and United States. He's really good for Russia. And Mr. Putin, Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin himself, went on record 2 days ago. The reason I appointed, by the way, Shoigu was promoted, for those people who still don't get it, what a Security Council is. He explained it very well. Even more money is going into the military-industrial complex, which will be fully integrated now through including that, whatever the kind of ways they will be integrating it through dual-use technologies and things of this nature. But as have been stated on a number of occasions, Russia is building up the force which will absolutely dominate battle space globally till probably at least 2050. So, and obviously, when you have even more money going there, which, by the way, now explains to you why a number of the auxiliary generals have been removed from the defense ministry. Obviously, you need to somebody with their mind and managerial capabilities of Belousov, who is, by the way, the one of the primary drivers behind the Russian economy booming. So there you go. That explains it all. So, and what can I say? They are trembling. Because we already saw how, table of organization and equipment of NATO fared in Ukraine. Not good, to put it mildly, okay? So now you will have even more, improving whatever needs improvement and expanding the technological gap between Russia and United States primarily. Europeans do not really factor here in a big way. So there you go. That's why they're afraid.
Yeah, I talked with Colonel Jacques Beau. He said that the Russian military today, we can say that it's unmatched. And it seems that this conflict in Ukraine has worked for Russia something like a gym for the Russian military. Mm-hmm. How do you see the current state of Russian military?
Well, yeah, it's the most powerful military in the world right now, and it absolutely doesn't bother itself with ridiculous ideas of projecting power somewhere, you know. The task of Russia is to defend their realm, okay? It is a definitely defensive, primarily defensive force, but it's obviously capable of doing, let's put it this way. If need be, it can go into Eastern Europe. Not that it's necessary. And of course, this is not in Russian doctrine, but it can project force on the ground into Eastern Europe, which it will not do. And in terms of the new technologies, there are simply, as I already stated, I'm on record for a number of years now that United States lost the arms race to Russia, both in nuclear and conventional, and Europe doesn't even factor here. So yeah, it is the most powerful military in the world right now. And obviously in terms of the operational experience, it's simply unmatched. There's nothing out there which can even compare. So yeah, because finally everybody can put away all this Gulf War 1.0, you know, and look at the real war and how it is being fought.
We've seen that Russians are fighting in Kharkov, and what's the strategy in your opinion? Because what's the importance of Kharkov for Russians right now?
Well, there are a number of points about Kharkov. First, for example, let's start with the easiest one. If Kharkov falls, which it may, it's going to be a devastating blow to the whatever is left of morale or rather lack thereof of the Ukrainian society and whatever the criminal gang of Zelensky and his curators from the West. But it's not the main point. The main point that, as it was stated by, at that time, Minister of Defense Shoigu, it was stated by Vladimir Putin himself, the main point of Kharkov offensive is to move away the what is called Rubezh Ognia, which is the line of the launch, so to speak, by well, pretty much what amounts to terrorist actions against the city of Belgorod and Kursk, which of course they launch there all kinds of things, primarily on civilian objects, because that's the desperation. You already saw yourself what happened to Belgorod. You know, they just blow things into, you know, blow civilian apartment blocks. So that's the thing. And of course, with Russia now, well, clearing, mopping up Volchansk, you have suddenly the range for both Lancet drones and obviously artillery, especially rocket-propelled projectiles, such as precision-guided munitions like Krasnopol and, you know, Centimeter, used by them non-star, pardon me, Koalitsiya self-propelled guns. The whole of Kharkov suddenly within the range, and obviously areas which are near Kharkov. And these are primarily the areas from where all those, so to speak, launches and shooting at civilian targets in within inside Russia have been done. So now it doesn't matter what you put in there. You can put there 10 patriots. It doesn't matter. They will be immediately annihilated. And the only thing they can do now is to start hiding, which they've been doing anyway. Whatever is remnants of the air defense and all those, you know, other means like, you know, the MLRS, multi-launch rocket systems, inside the civilian, you know, basically areas behind apartment blocks and as they did from the start. So, but now it really, you can literally take them out truly surgically, you know, even if they say stay in the courtyard somewhere in the apartment area, for example, you have, let's say, three or four, the well, so to speak, of the apartment blocks, whatever, 9-story or 12-story. If you position there, for example, the Patriot, let's say, not that they're getting it, but still, there are some left, launcher of Patriot, or let alone radar, you can strike it very precisely, just right in the middle, by all kinds of the precision-guided munitions, which Russia has in abundance, and now you can do it through artillery. And artillery, as you might understand, unlike the standoff weapons, has a much higher fire productivity. Fire productivity obviously being developing of the fires in a unit of time. And so as I'm quoting from what guys on the front line say, which is now within the Kharkov area, and they said, they shoot at us one, they're gonna get back 20 in response. This is pretty much what is the ratio, firepower ratio between Russian troops and whatever is armed forces of Ukraine today, remnants, basically.
And again, New York Times, they're talking about NATO allies are moving closer to sending troops to Ukraine to train Ukrainian troops. Do you think within this conflict, as the Russian offensive is getting momentum in Ukraine, what they're going to do in Ukraine, how they're going to train these troops?
They can't, because actually even most some of the Ukrainian troops which are left there, which are actually troops, not the merely meat, they most of them are meat, it's cannon fodder, but many of them, they will teach NATO how to fight, because NATO and all their instructors have no clue what they are doing. They don't have the documents, they don't have tactical and operational manuals how to do it properly. They do not understand how to deal with this. They never lived under somebody's long-range fires. They simply have no experience. I mean, I remember this Saddam got lucky at one point of time and hit with Scott accidentally their tent with the barrack, you know, in the desert with the US troops. It was like, oh my God, big deal. well, now multiply it by about 1,000, and this is how you have to live in the basically the tactical and operational rear. And they have no clue what they're going to teach them. How to shoot a machine gun? Well, it's risible, really. You cannot teach them to maneuver because it requires a long time. And then again, as they say, we have weapons, we don't have people anymore. And these are Ukrainians saying. So the New York Times can write whatever they want. They always sell smart and garbage, you know, so and they continue to do so. You know, there are no normal people who work there. So what can I say?
How do you find this idea? And a member of Bundestag in Germany was talking about Romania and Poland using air defense system of NATO attacking anything coming to the western part of Ukraine. Do you think that that would not bring a direct confrontation between NATO and Russia?
Again, Russia is not afraid about confrontation with NATO. Absolutely not. It has been stated. This member of Bundestag needs to a basic course in the tactic of the air defense and operational art because of in a theory of operations, because evidently he doesn't understand what he's talking about. Performance of the Western air defense is dismal. Okay, it's dismal. It's not the air defense of the 21st century. They can shoot down some planes, but if he wants to do it first, immediately, as I already stated many times, if they want to do it from the NATO territory, those countries, which there will be, you know, where they will try to do that, they will be attacked. And the positions of the air defense complexes will be annihilated. And if it escalates, then it escalates. Russia already stated very clearly what she's going to do. And fact is, you know, so those are, well, exercises on the non-strategic nuclear weapons was kind of a message, you know. So Germans generally, whatever the people sit in the Bundestag, they're not very bright people, most of them anyway, you know. So because normal people do not elect people like Scholz or Annalena Baerbock or, you know. So they can wet dream whatever they want. And because the buildup of Russian forces continues, and it will continue for some time until it reaches such proportions that it can absolutely dominate every single respect of the modern 21st century battlefield over NATO, headed by United States. So that's what it is.
Andre, it seems that German defense concern about one of the arm production, one of the factories of Germany going to Ukraine to produce arms in Ukraine. Do you think anything of this nature coming to Ukraine, is that acceptable for Russia or are they going to hit it? Anything coming
to Ukraine? They're going to hit it. Yeah, they're going to hit it if they know where it is. Some say that there are some underground shops which really do not produce that much. They primarily for repairs. But yeah, it's very well known where most of them are. And if they dig the new ones, you can easily see it from space. Russian, you know, space recon is pretty good. And yeah, they will hit it. So yeah, Germans are free to do whatever they want to do. So, you know, so it's like those troops, you know, let them send it. Okay, what's going to happen? They're going to die, period. That's it.
And the other thing we've heard that Sweden is going to deploy American nuclear weapons on its territory. Do you think that, how do you see these new moves in Finland and Sweden, especially in Sweden, why these, I think, dangerous movement that are happening there and they're talking about, what would be the reaction on the part of Russians, in your opinion?
It's already known what will be the reaction. So it's already happening. The Leningrad military district is being reestablished as we speak. So they want to put this so-called Typhoon. Typhoon is nothing more than just basically land variant of the MK-41 vertical launch system. So they call it nice name, you know, but it launches same old SM-6 air defense missile, and it can launch a Tomahawk. So they're probably going to put it on the Bornholm Island, which belongs, I believe, to Sweden. I've been a long time since I was navigating Baltics. And So yeah, they want to put some tomahawks close to Russian border. Russians will put some bastions with zircon close to those tomahawks, and that will be it. So, and if you have to understand, by the time zircons will annihilate those installations, tomahawks will not leave even the airspace of this Bornholm island. So it's, and this is not some kind of hyperbole. People, they know it. They know it. They are basically kamikaze. So, and but they may try. Obviously, there are many idiots and hawks who learned the war from the Hollywood movies. But Swedes, what can I say? It's their problem. This is a really seriously affected psychologically society. They are paranoid because there is a lot of things which are going there. They are also being basically replaced by all this, African and Middle Eastern immigrants. They have police which is unfunctional, and so it's all, they're just chihuahuas pretty much. And yeah, I read their analytics. It's laughable. I mean, this is not serious. This is kindergarten. But yeah, United States will try to obviously do whatever it always does to move some base, closer to something, and so think that it really makes it that much different.
Yeah. Last time I talked with Larry, we talked about this new article of a British think tank about the this war in Ukraine is a war of attrition, not a war of maneuver, not a war of maneuver. And Larry said that he has learned this from your book 2 years ago. He has read your book, and you wrote the book 7 years ago, as Larry mentioned it. And how, when it comes to these two type of wars, how can you explain to our audience what's the difference and why the West didn't get it so far?
It cannot get it. It has no experience with that. Zero. I mean, American military thought, and I know what Larry was referring to. It was the article by Lieutenant Colonel Vershinin of the US Army, and he was written in this RUSI, Royal United Services Institute, which is really laughable. It's when you look at British, think tanks, military think tanks, there are a bunch of amateurs there, so including those amateurs with the large stars, so that those generals, they have no clue what they're talking about, because as I already stated, they have no reference point. They use their toolkit, which is absolutely rotten in terms of military economic analysis, doesn't show them anything. They use the basically Wall Street analysis, that's what it is. And what he was writing, I mean, come on, I mean, if they would learn real operations of the Red Army, real, not how such falsifiers as Mr. Beaver, writes all this garbage about Great Patriotic War. If they learned it properly, not from Germans who lost that war and started to find all kinds of confabulated excuses why they lost to those, backward, Russian peasants and things of this nature. They would figure it out that you want to fight a real war, especially which involves their much large scale combined arms operations with an very increased, high density of power. You cannot do this maneuver. Because especially in the modern warfare, when is, for example, the best satellite constellation, Recon constellation, which is American one, works, for example, for Ukrainian armed forces 24/7. So how do you do? You're not going to accumulate such a massive, groupings of troops as it was, for example, hiding them and doing the maskirovka, as it was during the Operation Citadel, which Russians repelled and defeated during the Kursk battle, and of course then Operation Bagration, where Red Army was able to accumulate immense, strength, force, and struck where nobody was expecting it. You cannot do this anymore. You will be seen, for example, in such a war, which we see as the special military operation. And it works only by the exhausting enemy. And that's what happened. And again, do not forget there is a political objective. You muster resources and your forces, so to speak, to achieve it. And first, political, I mean, strategic objective for Russia is to demilitarize Ukraine. That has been largely done. Ukraine as actually state doesn't exist as such. And we already now know that, and as horrible as it sounds, the number of the casualties on Ukrainian side is absolutely horrifying. The largest slaughter of the cannon fodder since World War II. And these are those British and American generals who have no clue what they're dealing with. They thought that they can fight this war of maneuver, which they fought against third-rate, backward, undertrained, under-equipped, semi-literate Iraqi army after it allowed them for half a year to accumulate force. So if you learn war like this, forget it. You are not military professional, okay? So, but there you go. They cannot study properly the Red Army fights because they what? They are absolutely blinded by all this Cold War propaganda. They still believe, as Colonel McGregor comes up with the absolutely ridiculous numbers and some, I mean, fairy tales about how the Stalin executed 1 million people, you know, and it's like, I mean, it's complete garbage. So if you want to be strategist, how about you get your facts straight? And nobody in the United States, in the higher echelon, in all those think tanks and all those military academies have those facts. They don't have the toolkit. I listen to those leading strategists. The only thing they know is how to quote Sun Tzu and Clausewitz, you know, maybe Jomini, and try to apply to the warfare of the 21st century. But of course, in real war, for example, of the God forbids, United States and Russia, the first thing would you will have in this war, you will have your satellite constellation disabled largely. And then suddenly you become what? Blind. And you don't know what is going on that well. So, but United States was pushing this luck using those ISR, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance means as if there is a, you know, just a child's play. It is not. If Russia decides to shoot them down, she will. And nothing the United States can do about it. And, but, you know, we are in this situation right now when basically West has to crawl away, humiliated and defeated, as was predicted. So, and that's what it is.
When it comes to this new visit of Xi to Europe, in which he visited France, Serbia, and Hungary, considering these two countries, Serbia and Hungary, are so close to Russia, and they think so differently from what the Western Europeans are thinking of this conflict in Ukraine. How did you find this trip to Europe?
Well, in terms of Serbia and Hungary, triumphant. Xi achieved what he set up to achieve. These two countries are critical in terms of their BRI, Belt and Road Initiative, and obviously it's the kind of insert, or if you wish, their entrance for China big time into the European market. France, obviously, France is not a sovereign state. Macron was supervised by von der Leyen, who is the marionette puppet of the State Department, and she's stupid, both of them stupid. The guy is basically a bank teller boy, and you know, so there's nothing to talk about. France is just absolutely in shameful shape, so to speak. You know, now they have this Caledonia issue. They are really hurting deeply, you know, and humiliated, of course. But Xi was triumphant, obviously, in Serbia and Hungary, and it's China's market. China builds number of plants both in Serbia and especially in Hungary. So, you know, it's great for them, you know, there's no doubt about it. You know.
In your opinion, how strategic this partnership is becoming vis-a-vis this trip, this new trip of Putin?
It is extraordinarily productive. And then, of course, don't forget, Putin is there not only to make, which is inevitable because Russian Chinese trade grows, I mean, in leaps and bounds, dramatically, exponentially. And obviously, we also have the situation with the strategic setup, so to speak, because nobody knows if a humiliated United States and the combined West will not try to take some kind of revenge with Taiwan and, you know, all those things of this nature. They are really, you know, just striving to get into the fight with China. Because obviously for combined West, it also in some sense is to reclaim the whatever small part of the prestige which was completely destroyed, you know, in Europe. So Putin was obviously, you know, there too for this issue. And it's the issue of the not just economic cooperation, which is understandable, and cultural cooperation and, you know, within the framework of BRICS, but it is also the issue of the strategic stability and what Russia, what China will ask Russia militarily, and what Russia will say, yeah, we can do this, we cannot do that, you know? And Chinese obviously know what is cooking inside Russia, especially inside the military industrial complex, and they need all possible assistance in terms of the operations, how to plan them, how to execute them, and they will need probably some things from Russia which are kinetic, let's put it this way. And Putin is there to talk about that. And at some point of time, we will learn, I guess, something about it, you know. And that's not going to be advertised. Everything will be done as it is being done actually today behind the closed doors, most of it.
And Biden is trying to do the same as Trump did, and Biden is doing the same right now. And in your opinion, how that would affect these new tariffs on China, that would bring Russia and China even closer?
Well, for starters, we need to keep in mind that this is for electric vehicles. They're now, what, 102% or something like that. It's a fad, okay? Electric vehicles definitely have the place in the, you know, in our world, but obviously most what everybody were those, you know, the fanboys and fangirls with a very weak education in physics, you know, and any subject related to this. They don't understand what electric vehicles today are. This is not what they are. And they are absolutely, well, primarily it is for their virtue signaling and showing how advanced you are. It's primarily for people with humanities degrees, you know. But in reality, it's, China was fast, you know, in terms of start of the production of these vehicles. Because, of course, it was the idea that they will compete with Teslas, for example. But generally, it's much ado about nothing. Chinese strengths, economic strength, which is immense, is not in the electric vehicles. This is just, you know, for to throw the bone to some idiots from Stanford, you know, or Harvard, who doesn't understand what is going on with, has the degree in economics. But primarily the China's strength is, of course, there. It's her shipbuilding is monstrous. China just absolutely eclipses everybody in shipbuilding, of course, the production of the metals. And so these are the, and of course, radio electronics, you know, especially consumer electronics, that's where the China strength is. There, as I already stated, those vehicles, while still they produce a little bit of the profit, you know, but they, in reality, they are not, you know, up to the task yet, maybe in 10 years or something like that. So this is all kind of PR-ish, you know, in many respects. And then again, Biden and his team, they are all lawyers. They have no clue what electric vehicle is and how it is being produced. They just listen to those idiots, you know, who with the economics degree, who know only, you know, how to do the Excel. And but China's, as already stated, primarily impact on American market is, of course, electronics. Consumer electronics, all those, you know, cell phones, other things which you buy from acoustic systems to what have you, smartphones. And it's just immense. You know, China has an immense capability in this respect. So, and I don't think so they will try to tax that, because in this case, American economy will simply implode, you know. So, and that's what I have to say about this. I'm not really it's not really a big deal. So, and it's fat, it's ideologically driven, and, you know, so, yeah.
Andre, the other thing that I don't see much about it in the news in the mainstream media is the situation in Georgia. And there is an article in Bloomberg that says Georgia is having its Maidan moment. You know, it's so amazing how they're relating Georgia to Ukraine. We know the same movement, color revolution, it's happening right now. And they're talking about that the US and EU have a chance to keep Georgia from getting dragged into Putin's orbit. How do you find the situation in Georgia right now?
Well, you have to understand those NGOs, non-governmental organizations from the United States and from Europe, they are one-trick ponies. As I already stated, this my book is coming out. They are run by the morons with PhDs, basically, people who have no usable skills in life. They have those fake degree mills, diplomas, and you know, degrees. So they know only one thing: how to create color revolution, Maidan. So that means that United States can use something like what happened to Ukraine or, you know, Georgia. Georgia is a poor, pauper country. Okay. They used to be very rich and wealthy, you know, during Soviet times. Georgians, you know, they drove the best cars. Tbilisi was the center of the almost free enterprise. They look at Russians with the contempt, you know, things of this nature. Now they're miserable. You know, they have, you may not know, in some elevators in apartment blocks, in Tbilisi, you have to pay money to get the service of the elevator. So this is pretty much explains to you. So as natural, you know, they have a bunch of the young imbeciles who, you know, studied under all those liberal BS programs in universities and things like that. And they still believe in this democracy. They believe in high standards. They think that if they join the West, they will live like in Hollywood movies. It's stupid, you know. So we all go through this phase in our life, but they are really brainwashed. So what happens now, indeed, the attempts to stop their passing of this foreign agent laws, which is essentially copied from American FARA, which is good law, by the way. You know what? You work against the country, go and register yourself. If not, we will expose you. And we'll expose your means of the financing, you know? And obviously, very many people who are obviously agitated by the American NGOs, many of which are France, for CIA, you know, what have you. So they don't like it because they know once this will be exposed, their state of Georgia will have the right to take the appropriate legal action against this, like shutting them down, you know. And plus, if they want to continue like that, they will end up disappearing. Georgia will disappear as the nation. They will be spread all over the place. And what smart people in Georgia, they understand that if you want to survive as a nation, you need to have pragmatic. Russians do not want to take Georgia on her balance. No, Russia doesn't pay anymore as it was a Soviet Union, which was Russian. Russia proper was paying for all those, you know, basically, you know, fringes of the Soviet Union. No, but you can establish degree of the, you know, trade, and you can kind of slowly develop relations where it will be beneficial for Georgia. There are people like that, but most of those urban youth, they're stupid, okay? And they're paid for by all those agitators from all those NGOs, they're including, you know, a couple of American citizens have been already detained there, you know, who were just basically given money, you know, Victoria Nuland, cookies, things of this nature. So yeah, same old, but we'll see, you know, what can I say? It's their choice, but Russia, obviously, if somebody begins to think that they can use Georgia as a ram, Georgia is nothing compared to Ukraine. Russia will simply squeeze it like it did in 2008, and that will be it, you know? So, and, but again, as I said, State Department and White House, they are incapable of learning. They don't have a capability to, intellectual capability to learn, to analyze, to synthesize. They just don't have it. They're one-trick ponies.
Because the war in Ukraine is running out of gas. That's why they need a new conflict in Georgia.
But of course, the big one is China. You know, they feel that China threatens them. Well, it's too late. Chinese economy dwarfs American one. it just dwarfs. It's not even funny. Okay. The problem, of course, China lags in some critical technological areas, such as commercial airspace, for example. This was the part of Xi, I believe, when he was in France. France being, of course, the place of Airbus. Toulouse, the main integration facility. They have some integration facility in Germany. I don't think so for long because German electricity prices are, I mean, they are insane. So China obviously needs that. But other than that, when you look at the dynamics of the trade, mutual trade between China and United States, it's been declining quite substantially. And so China is dumping now the treasuries. So the process is ongoing, okay?
Is Taiwan going to learn from Ukraine to understand what's at stake for them if they go after some sort of conflict with the mainland China?
I don't think so. It's all a political, push-pull situation. You know, it's like in this, cat dog cartoon, two things, pulling at each other, in the different directions. It's the fact that it all depends on the political forces at play here. In terms militarily, Taiwan doesn't have, again, anything comparable militarily wise to China. And I don't think so United States militarily can offer much advice. Offer that, well, they can deliver a bunch of the, let's say, harpoons, to Taiwanese Navy and Taiwanese ground forces. You can launch it from, they might even go for, I don't think so they will, though, because that will create, of course, the mayhem immediately. So other than that, I mean, what can they do? I mean, and China is not interested in doing this militarily, obviously, but they will show force if something is overstepped, let's put it this way, purely militarily. For example, as I already stated, positioning those Typhoons, which is the euphemism for the land-launched Tomahawks in Taiwan, then yeah, we might see the serious conflagration. And then, of course, United States probably plans to do Gulf of Tonkin by, making Filipino Navy dying, suiciding itself against Chinese Navy. And then, of course, yeah, there we go, Americans coming. And, it's just, yeah, it's child's play. It's really, it's so transparent. It is so easy calculable. And that's really, I don't think so it's going to happen. But who knows? Again, don't quote me on that.
From what we know from Japan, do you think if something happens between the United States and China, Japan would get involved, or they were smarter than this?
No, they will get involved one way or another, because obviously you have Yokosuka naval base. There are a fifth strike group, I believe, with Ronald Reagan, I believe, his carrier group is there. They have also, and of course, United States Navy wants Japanese to get involved. They have a very decent surface fleet. Some people say that Kongu, their DDG, the destroyers, which are Aegis, they actually even better than Arleigh Burke, class DDGs. They look similar even. But Japan also has an extraordinarily good submarine fleet. It's all diesel, non-nuclear, but extremely well-designed, state-of-the-art boats, extremely well-prepared crews. So that could become, in conjunction with other forces, and of course they will try to probably involve South Korea, that may become a factor. United States definitely wants Japan on its side. But China in this case will probably strike Yokosuka. Yeah. So it's a complicated game, okay? It's also the game of the strategic ambiguity and of what's called the threatening period. How do you know if United States is going to attack? You don't know. It's very difficult. They move those carrier strike groups. They move things to Guam in and out. But it's all United States would love to have most of the Chinese Navy plan. Liberation, which is really funny sounding Navy Army, rather Army Navy in bases. If anything really conflagrates. So there's a lot of playing on the strategic level there. And that's why visit of Vladimir Putin to Beijing is so important. What is going to be decided on the purely military technological level? And something will be, if not already, decided there. And yeah, for now.
Yeah. Andre, just to wrap up this session, I want to talk about what Lindsey Graham said about dropping nuclear bombs in the Middle East. This is so crazy and so unbelievably, and people would think that how this guy can be a US senator. And this guy, unbelievably, it's so ignorant.
Well, we have to ask people of South Carolina how they continue to elect this imbecile and war criminal, which obviously reflects really badly on people of South Carolina. It's their senator. I'm sorry, guys. I mean, whatever it is, it's either utterly corrupt state, so which I can believe, or they are just dumb as a stump if they continue to basically elect the guy who is definitely war criminal, supporter of terrorism, Islamic terrorism, totally in the pockets of the military industrial complex and AIPAC. And he is crazy. I mean, he's also covered, he big time covered, actually. He would never dare to talk to anybody who actually can ask him serious questions. So there you go. And what can I say? I do not live in South Carolina. We have our problems here in Washington with electing all other kind of crazies, but this time on the other spectrum of the, so political spectrum of the United States. But I mean, yes, I mean, this is the guy who represents South Carolina. Let them live in that. They elect freaking war criminal who should be behind bars and should be, what, I don't know, whatever the type of the punishment, sentenced to some kind of serious, charm behind bars.
You know, the worst is the way they're bragging about how they bombed Japan and Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And they said, oh, we did that because it was in our benefit to do that. It's unbelievable how these guys are thinking these days.
Well, they are very much illiterate too. Their military history of the United States, especially in World War II and after World War II, is not completely but largely confabulated. And obviously, and actually, the draw bombs have been dropped there not to make Japan surrender, which was ready to surrender already after Red Army, just basically devastated there. It was to demonstrate to the Soviet Union that United States has, bombed. That's the only reason. The only. So what can I say?
We know that in the Middle East, there are a lot of players in the
Yeah.
Middle East who are not sitting aside and seeing what just dropping
Absolutely.
nuclear bombs in.
Well, I mean, what is happening now is the outright genocide and ethnic cleansing of Gaza and Rafah. That tells you about, Israel lost militarily. So the only thing they can do is to, strike civilians. That's what they do really well. They cannot fight real war. They couldn't really for a while. And again, many people do not understand that the Israel's main victory, so to speak, of 1967, in 1973, have been done by people who have been actually. Very many of them were from the Soviet army, who many officer corps to a huge degree was the graduates of the Soviet military academies, So, but yeah, they better forget about it, So that's what they are today. Just, what the gang of thugs who, fight women, children, torture people, just it's what can I say? It's a genocide, pure and simple.
Yeah.